that's where we grow. It's in the middle. Middle to nowhere.
Hey, friends. Welcome back to the Middle to Nowhere podcast. I am your host, Taylor Blanpete. If you caught the last episode, I shared some thoughts surrounding having spiritual seasons, and specifically when we get into times that are like winter, those seasons, you know, where everything feels uncertain, heavy, and disorienting. But when you notice and take awareness a little bit deeper, it's strangely sacred. And since putting that out, I've had some more moments myself where that theme has continued to echo, where I've felt both the depth of disconnection and also the whispers of a quiet invitation to be present with it. So today I wanted to share something, some more like personal aha moments that I've had lately, and talk about this kind of weird counterintuitive thing that we tend to do, kind of surrounding this question of why do we isolate ourselves when we experience sadness? So let's get into it. So a few days ago, I was feeling really off, you know, just disconnected, questioning all the things that I'm doing in my life, and honestly, just feeling sad. And it wasn't the kind of sadness that comes with, you know, like a clear reason, like grief, or there's a specific issue going wrong that I can pinpoint. It was more like this heavy fog rolling in that made me feel, you know, distant from everything, you know, friends, family, my wife, myself, my connection to the divine. It's just one of those times where, you know, just a few days before feeling that way, I'd been riding this big wave, feeling inspired, connected, super creative, just this feeling of inflow, like everything was lining up and, you know, I was like tapped into something greater. And then, you know, it happens usually without warning. I just, you know, I fell into this kind of deep emotional valley type state. So, and, you know, I've seen this pattern in myself before. I know that, you know, people who are on this kind of inner healing journey, that path of healing is never a linear line, but a lot of ups and downs, and high moments tend to be followed by low ones. But what caught me off guard this time was just realization how quickly I started turning against myself. And luckily this time I had a bit more awareness to just observe how I started pulling away from people. You know, I kind of ignored texts and other messages. I had just listed some items on Facebook Marketplace and was getting messages about them. And I was just like, why did I put this stuff up there? And I just ignored them. And, you know, some of my friends tend to send me funny videos on social media that I always really enjoy watching, but it's like I wouldn't even click into the messages to even watch them. You know, I wouldn't make plans to do things that, you know, bring me joy. And so, you know, after a couple of days of kind of just like stewing in this feeling, I finally pushed myself to, you know, carve out the time to go journal at a coffee shop. It's kind of my normal ritual that I know usually can get me out of a funk. So I end up going to the coffee shop, and I was writing up my thoughts about all of this, and, you know, I started to see this pattern. You know, when I'm feeling depressed, I tend to feel this feeling of loneliness and isolation. And for some unconscious reason, I tend to isolate myself even more. And I was just asking myself, like, why would I do the very thing that makes this feeling worse? Why would I push people and community away when it seems like that's really deep down what I tend to crave most? You know, I know that part of it is just I don't want to be a downer on people. You know, you can call up your, you know, one of my friends or someone in my family, and it's like, oh, hey, how's it going? You good? Well, I'm sad and I don't know why, so there you go. Enjoy that. Bye. So I know that there's that feeling of just not wanting to be a burden, but I also like immediately felt like I don't have any real legitimate reasons to be sad. Like, there are so many more people in much worse situations who like have the right to be sad. And so I started looking into that piece a little bit more, and I realized that it's a pretty common belief. You know, this feeling that you don't have the right to be sad because others have it worse. And, you know, while it seems noble on the surface, after looking into it more, it's actually another subtle form of self-abandonment. And it's been called the comparative suffering trap. And this belief often sounds like, I have a roof over my head, people love me, I'm physically safe, so why should I be sad? Or, you know, other people are going through real things, who am I to complain? I'm being ungrateful and I let myself feel this way. It's something that feels like humility, but when you really look at it, it's rooted in shame. You know, it assumes that sadness has to be earned. And that's not true. And it also assumes that it should only be reserved for those in some sort of visible crisis. You know, but emotional pain doesn't operate on any sort of hierarchy. You know, your sadness is not invalid just because someone else is also suffering. It's not a competition. You know, I really love a quote by Brené Brown that says, empathy is not finite. When we practice empathy for ourselves, the capacity for empathy towards others increases. So that was really good for me to understand about that part of my own sadness, is, you know, getting into that comparative suffering trap. So, you know, okay, I realize that makes sense. I can allow myself to be sad if I'm feeling that way. But as I continued to journal, I realized that there was like this deeper feeling underneath that sadness and the idea of me, you know, reaching out to other people and why I isolate. And I realized that it was some sort of version of shame. You know, when thinking about reaching out to friends or family in that kind of state, I realized that I was embarrassed to be sad, like almost like ashamed to be in a low place. I felt like I was doing something wrong. And the more I kind of sat with that idea, the more I realized that I had this unconscious belief that essentially said, you know, if I'm depressed, I've failed. I must be doing something wrong. You know, I should know better. I should be able to rise above this. And, you know, I continued writing out what I was feeling and just trying to get to the root of it. And then, you know, I wrote down this question, you know, what belief am I holding right now? And is it actually true? And I feel like that started to open this whole thing a little bit deeper. I saw that I've been carrying this belief that if I do everything right, you know, if I meditate enough, stay grateful enough, eat right, exercise enough, be a good enough friend or, you know, teacher or guide or partner, then I'll be fulfilled and content all the time. And, you know, on the flip side, if I'm feeling sad or empty or disconnected, it must mean I'm not doing enough or I'm not spiritual enough, or even worse, that something is just inherently wrong with me. And this hit me even deeper when I realized how much, you know, this has been amplified now that I'm, you know, over this past year, I'm putting myself out here on this podcast. You know, I'm now guiding breath work and meditation and being this kind of teacher guy at my job at Mind Zero, you know, being seen as this teacher person. It's like suddenly I'm someone who's supposed to have it all together. You know, I've created this idea in my head that if I show sadness or struggle, it discredits me or makes me less trustworthy. You know, but like, here's the thing, that that's just the ego talking. That's not truth. That's a part of me trying to earn love and respect by being impressive or inspiring or something. And I know that the truth is that no one needs me to be perfect. And my humanity is not a weakness. It's actually a bridge that connects me to others. And thinking a little more about this whole kind of pattern of thinking, I remember what I had shared in episode 9, where I break down kind of the ins and outs of some beliefs that correlate to having a savior complex. And I talked about how, you know, I was raised in a setting where church leaders were rarely ever vulnerable about their struggles with doubt and seemed to have all the answers. And if you could just believe enough, just pray enough, everything would be right in your life. And I realized, you know, I was in a very different setting. Now I was creating that same model that I needed to be a certain way to be loved. You know, I was unconsciously believing that if I reach out to my friends or my family when I'm sad, that I'll just be a downer and make their day worse. But doing that, like reaching out when you're sad, that's what true vulnerability and true depth in relationships look like. You know, what if instead of the idea of me bringing them down, it actually is an opportunity to create closeness? What if my vulnerability opens the door for them to express something that they may need to as well? You know, obviously there's good and worse ways of doing that and reaching out, and, you know, always in person is better. We don't always have that luxury, but anyway, I just kind of thought a bit on the whole question, kind of just going back to the question of isolation and depression, and why would we isolate ourselves when we get depressed? Like, why does this, because it seems like this is a pretty normal thing to do. So, yeah, I looked a little more into it, and, you know, just from like a psychological perspective of like why we isolate when depressed, and some insights came in. So like one, kind of surrounding shame and this like self-worth distortion. You know, when someone is depressed, their self-perception becomes skewed. You know, the inner critic starts to get louder and louder. It could come in like thoughts like, I'm a burden. No one really wants to be around me. I don't want to bring people down. you know, all these type of thoughts begin to dominate. And this creates like a self-fulfilling cycle. You know, the more isolated we become, the more those beliefs feel true, even though they're not. And depression often hijacks the part of the brain that is responsible for emotional regulation and social motivation, leading to what's caused increased self-referential rumination, which basically means we get trapped in our own minds, you know, spinning thoughts of worthlessness and shame that discourage us from seeking help. So the second thing that was interesting to learn is, you know, low energy equals low initiative. So depression also leads to what is psychomotor retardation, meaning everything feels heavier. You know, the energy required to initiate a conversation, text someone back, or even, you know, just leaving the house can feel overwhelming. Even desiring connection doesn't translate to action because the body feels frozen. So, you know, in this state, pulling away feels like the only option available, even when we know it will deepen the pain over time. And another reason why we do this is because of just protective instinct. You know, sometimes people isolate as kind of emotional self-preservation, you know, a protective like reflex to avoid further stimulation, judgment, or rejection, you know, especially for those with a history of relational trauma. You know, the idea of being vulnerable while already raw and super depressed can feel just terrifying. So it creates this paradox. It's like, I need connection to heal, but I don't feel safe enough to receive it. And it's a crappy place to be in, stuck in that loop. And, you know, I've been there at certain times in my past, and it's hard to get out of that loop because, you know, you're being fed all of these inner critic things, you know, feeling like a burden and that no one really wants to be around you. And your body is just so tired. And so, yeah, it just becomes this cycle that is definitely hard to kick. And so thinking about this in a different way, you know, I tend to enjoy pondering on topics from like an evolutionary perspective, you know, in how we as humans have adapted socially, emotionally, relationally, culturally, and how things like technology and factors like governmental and community and class structures can sometimes create situations where our evolution is like abnormally hindered or is now counterintuitive to how we used to live or our ancestors used to live. So like, for example, if we think about how humans lived hundreds of years ago, you know, in this more tribalistic or village-based communities, depression and isolation would look very different. You know, for one, loneliness was probably pretty rare, you know, in these ancestral environments. Chronic isolation was virtually impossible. You know, we lived in close proximity with kin groups who shared everything, you know, resources, space, time. You know, from birth to death, we were embedded in this kind of relational net. You know, loneliness, as we know it today, is largely a somewhat modern invention, you know, one that's intensified by things like hyper-individualism, you know, these nuclear family structures, digital communication replacing, you know, embodied presence, and just as a society, especially in the West, just the glorification of independence. And, you know, if we continue to look at all of this through this lens of this kind of evolution or de-evolution process, isolation, you know, would equal danger. You know, from that evolutionary standpoint, isolation was dangerous. It meant vulnerability to predators, starvation, or exile. So the body and brain, you know, would have evolved to interpret loneliness as a survival threat. So the same part of the brain that processes physical pain also lights up during experiences of social rejection. This is why, you know, depressive isolation feels so painful. Like your nervous system is sounding an internal alarm that this is not good for you. This is dangerous. And, you know, another kind of thought about this from an evolutionary standpoint is depression as an adaptive signal. So, you know, I read that some evolutionary psychologists argue that depression may have originally served a function, you know, to force stillness, introspection, and withdrawal in moments of overwhelming stress or illness, allowing the body and mind to recover without, you know, expending social energy. You know, in a tribal context, this would have been temporary, and your people would, you know, likely bring you food, check in, and sit with you. But in today's modern society, where, you know, we're more atomized and isolated to begin with, this withdrawal isn't necessarily interrupted by community. So instead of being adaptive, it becomes this chronic issue. So it's like the chain in the full kind of cycle is now broken. You know, if we don't have that built-in community, it doesn't really work in that same context. So why do we still do it? It's likely because, you know, the body is just following an old program. You know, that program that says, retreat when weak, don't burden the group, protect yourself, lay low. But again, in today's world where connection isn't built into daily life, this instinct kind of seems to backfire. So I continue to think about all of that. And, you know, all of that is a very theoretical and kind of logic-based lens of looking at all of this. And, you know, I try to also try to look at things from a still theoretical, but just kind of coming with from a place of wonder and trying to look at things from a more higher spiritual lens. Because, you know, over the past few years, I've been slowly waking up to this kind of new way of seeing the world, one that is less about fixing and more about trusting. You know, I used to think that if something felt painful or chaotic, it meant that something had gone wrong. You know, like somehow we have lost our way as humans, and we need to right it. But through things like inner work and plant medicine and teachings of some spiritual teachers, like I've started to shift into a perspective that says, you know, what if everything is unfolding exactly as it needs to? For example, you know, Ram Dass said, everything in your life is there as a vehicle for your transformation. Use it all. And another guy that I really like, this guy named Peter Crony, he says that people in situations will come into your life to show you where you're not yet free. And so quotes like that really shook something loose in me over time. It just made me start asking, like, what if the hard stuff isn't a detour, but the path itself? What if the world isn't broken, but healing in a way that's slower and more mysterious than we can understand? You know, this perspective has helped me meet my own suffering and the suffering I see around me with a little more softness and curiosity. You know, instead of seeing pain as a problem, I've begun to see it more as a teacher. And there's a guy named Teilhard de Chardin, who's quoted saying, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And part of the human experience, I'm realizing, is being in the middle of this kind of great remembering, you know, this long, slow awakening. And, you know, if that's true, then even our disconnection, our loneliness, our depressions, they may not be signs of failure, but potentially invitations to rebuild what we've lost. You know, not by bypassing the pain, but by honoring it as a necessary part of the healing process. So looking at, you know, this whole depression and isolation tendency in us, like, just, you know, bear with me. Let's just for a moment pretend that, what if everything is perfect? You know, even the struggle, what might depression and our instinct to isolate be trying to teach us? You know, not just individually, but collectively as well. So if we zoom out to the big picture, you know, if we trust that everything belongs, that even depression, this, you know, at this point, global epidemic of disconnection, it's not just a glitch, you know, it's a messenger, a signal, a deeply embodied invitation to remember something we've forgotten. So if the body is the subconscious mind, then maybe collective depression is the psyche of the world saying, I'm tired, I feel alone, I need love. You know, and what if the widespread isolation we experience in depression isn't proof that we're broken, but the proof that the system we're in is misaligned with our design? You know, in modern life teaches us to be self-sufficient, productive, polished, and always fine. Everything's fine. I'm fine. But obviously our nervous systems weren't built for that. They were built for belonging. So when we get sad and our instinct is to withdraw, maybe that's not just psychological dysfunction. It's a revealing of what's missing. And maybe we have to feel it to see it. You know, in this light, depression becomes some, you know, this like collective teacher. One that could be, you know, pointing out the illusion of individualism or revealing our over-resilience on productivity as identity, or, you know, could be calling us back to rest, presence, and things like connection. You could say it's like part of the curriculum of awakening. And you know, I see it as the counterintuitive instinct. This counterintuitive instinct is actually a mirror. So, you know, what if withdrawing when we're hurting, you know, even though it seems counterproductive, what if it's the soul's way of creating contrast? You know, when we isolate, we feel the ache of disconnection. And that ache becomes like an activation point for seeking healing. You know, like a warning light that comes up on your dashboard in your car. You know, pulling away is what draws attention to our deeper longing for tribe, for attunement and shared space. You know, if we didn't feel the emptiness, would we actually be moved to change anything? You know, I personally feel this specific one a lot. You know, this idea of tribe and community has been something that has, I don't know, kind of plagued me for a long time. And I'm still not sure all the reasons why, but there is this ache for something. And I don't know if that's, you know, some sort of unrealized future or what, but I definitely feel it. And, you know, another way of looking at this is like a spiritual reframe of depression as, you know, the collective soul's whisper, if you will. So, you know, just for a second, let's play with the idea that we are all part of one collective soul, slowly remembering itself. And if that's true, then the reason so many of us are struggling with isolation and depression right now might be because we're, you know, in like the labor pains of that rebirth. You know, we're being taught, not necessarily through sermons and things like that, but through somatic reality. And what we're being taught is that we can't keep living like this. We need each other, not as a luxury, but as medicine. And what's beautiful is this, is as more of us wake up to that truth, as more of us name it and stay when we want to run, as more of us hold space for sadness without shame, we become the new pattern. You know, like mycelium spreading underground, slow, invisible, but unstoppable. So, yeah, I personally believe that this is part of a bigger plan. You know, maybe the instinct to withdraw when sad was never meant to be a permanent state. Maybe it's a built-in initiation. You know, a sacred pause that makes us ache for reconnection so deeply that we begin to rebuild society in a more honest and interdependent way. Maybe in this big unfolding of human evolution, depression is not, obviously, is not the end of the story. It's the moment we start asking the real questions. And those of us who have been through it to whatever varying degree and who's willing to speak it out loud are part of what helps shift the collective story from the old stories of I'm broken to, hey, I'm human and I'm not meant to do this alone. So, yeah, you know, and if we want to go back real quick, just going back to my original belief that I uncovered, you know, that belief that, you know, if I'm depressed, I've failed or I must be doing something wrong. I should know better. I should be able to rise above this. I finally, you know, asked myself, I tend to do this when I journal, is kind of almost ask myself questions and answer. And a lot of times I'll use a different color pen, almost like interview style. It reminds me of one of my favorite, to quote Brené Brown again, one of my favorite, I think I heard her quote it in one of her books that she was quoting someone else, but basically the quality of your life is equal to the quality of questions you ask yourself. I'm probably butchering the quote, but something like that. But I like asking a lot of questions and drilling deeper into things. But the question I asked myself in this whole journaling process was, what's the belief that I want to choose instead? And what came through was this. My sadness is not a failure. It's a sacred part of the process. It's part of the spiral of becoming who we're meant to be. I am not less spiritual when I'm sad. I'm actually being authentic. And then the deeper belief I'm choosing is this. I do not need to be happy to be in the divine flow of grace. I do not need to always be joyful to be worthy. My presence is enough. My honesty is enough. Even my sadness is enough. And after I wrote that and finished my journal session, the whole tone of my day started to shift. You know, it didn't magically lift the sadness, but it was as if it like made it feel safe. It made me feel safe to just be with myself as I am, without needing to fix or escape it. Because I think healing isn't about eliminating sadness or those type of feelings. It's about removing the shame around it. It's about meeting ourselves with tenderness when we fall into those states, into that valley, you know, knowing that we'll keep on the path and that, you know, the mountain is still within reach, and that when we have those mountaintop moments, we'll likely walk through the valley again after that, you know, hopefully learning to soften the grasping for the mountain each time, and knowing that every valley has something to teach us. So if you've ever felt that same shame or caught yourself thinking, I shouldn't be feeling this way, I just want to offer you this. There is nothing wrong with you. You are not doing this wrong. You are not failing at being spiritual. You're just human. You're just alive. And that's more than enough. The invitation is to keep showing up for yourself, especially in those low places, because that's where compassion grows its deepest roots. So I'm learning not to pull away from people when I feel low. I'm learning not to hide. I'm learning to let myself be seen, you know, even in my shadows. Because that's the type of person I want to be, you know, and from kind of a work aspect, that's the kind of teacher I want to be. Not someone who's figured it all out, but someone who walks through it with honesty and authenticity. You know, not someone who says, this is how I figured everything out, do these steps. But here is how I've worked with this and continue to work through this. So let's all choose the path of vulnerability and normalize our humanity and stop trying to hold these masks like we have it all figured out, because we don't. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and I hope this message has been something that resonates with you. And hey, like, if you're in a really dark place right now, if the weight feels too heavy, or you're just having thoughts of maybe having thoughts of ending your life, like, please don't carry that alone. Reach out to someone you trust and know that if you are actually struggling, you know, with thoughts of suicide or suicidal ideations, that there's always someone on the other end. If you want to call 988 day or night, it's a hotline 24/7. You are not alone and you matter so, so much more than you know. But feel free to reach out to me on social media if you want to talk about anything further. You know, I'm not a trained therapist or anything, but I do love connecting about this type of stuff. So I don't check my messages super often, but I will eventually get to you if you're interested in chatting. But thank you guys so much again for listening, and may you have a wonderful and peaceful week ahead. Thank you.